The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello, good morning. 3 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, the 13th of May, 2026. You're very welcome along to another edition of The Greg Hughes Show, and it's another bumper one. You know that anyway. We've got an awful lot to pack in between now and 11 o'clock, including whatever you want to talk about, issues that you want to raise, good news you wish to pass on, whatever you choose. The lines are open for you right now. 0860 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 0860 25000. Or you can give us a call on 074 91 25000. If email is your thing, comments at highlandradio.com. And just to remind you, you can watch the programme today and every day by going to our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland. So you can watch across your mobile devices, your smart TV, your Fire Stick, and we're on our Facebook pages as well. Right, so there you go. Don't forget, if you're listening to the podcast or the overnight repeat, you can still have your say, you know, get in touch with us via the text or the email, and we'll carry over those comments and include them in the next live show. We might cross to the Dáil in a wee while, because, as you know, we spoke extensively on the case of Aaron Langan, who is from Leahy. In fact, Piers Doherty is speaking on that matter now.
So, yeah, well, Mr. Hoon. Minister, I want to raise the urgent access of the drug givinostat for children. I want to raise the urgent issue of access to the drug givinostat for children living with Duchenne muscular dystrophy, or DMD, as is commonly known. And givinostat was approved by the European Medicines Agency last June, so it's nearly a year now, but the HSE is still reviewing whether they're going to actually cover the cost of this drug for children and adults across the state. And what makes the delays around givinostat's availability particularly distressing, Minister, and I'm sure you know this, is that it is only available to children who still have mobility. So these children are in a race against time, and they are looking on as the HSE and the government drags their feet while their children are seriously at risk of not being able to have this life-changing support through this drug. The matter is particularly urgent for young Aaron Langan. Aaron is a 9-year-old. He's from Leahy. He's from my county in Donegal. And his family are fearful that Aaron's mobility is further impacted by this condition, that he will not be able to have this life-changing drug, even if the HSE approves its reimbursement. Aaron's mother and father, Aaron, they were here last year in the Dáil, campaigning, pleading with government to get their act together to allow them access to this life-saving drug. At that time, Aaron was walking. Today, he's in a wheelchair, and the issue of mobility is absolutely crucial. This drug isn't just a light game-changer for Aaron. Young Dermot O'Sullivan from my own county of Donegal is another example. Dermot is 10 years of age. Dermot, his older brother Nathan, was on a trial in Britain. Nathan is now an adult who is able to avail of this drug, have a filling life. But yet Dermot, who is 10, is not able to have this drug. Imagine the distress of a parent knowing that one child has the drug that changes your life and the other child is denied it because the HSE and the government haven't got their act together. I'm asking the government for a compassionate intervention to allow these drugs available to these children who are in a race against time.
And talk to Patrick Gallagher.
Okay, I'm pleased to have the opportunity to raise this important issue by way of Topical, and my colleague Deputy Doherty has outlined how it's affecting two families in Donegal. The European Medicines Agency has approved this drug, the DMD, last year, and now I, together with I'm sure all colleagues in the House, are anxious that the department exert the pressure on the HSE to make this drug available to these children. And an example of the success of this drug is that Nathan O'Sullivan, whom Deputy Doherty has mentioned, has been on this drug for a number of years. His mother took him to the UK, was on the trial drug, and it's been extremely successful in prolonging his life, acting as a full life, working with the local GAA, as a statistician, has his own car. So we would like to think that his brother, Dermot, and his the Langan family would have an opportunity of obtaining this drug as well. And we know the cost of it can seem rather high, but we can't put a cost on the life of a child. They are suffering, the family are suffering. There's the mental torture of this. It's 7 by 24/7 by 365 days of the year while they have to care for these children. There are about 100 or so in the country, and I think it's incumbent on the Minister, on the HSC and on the Department to ensure this drug is made available as soon as possible. There's a question of a bit ambulatory, and they have to be able to move when they start the drug. So the clock is ticking, and it's vitally important that a positive decision is taken as soon as possible and the provision of the drugs is made available. And I would also say to the drugs company who are making exorbitant profits that they should reduce the prices, and they should now work with the Department and the HSE to make the drug available sooner rather than later. Thank you.
I
want to thank both deputies, Deputy Gallagher and Deputy Doherty, for raising this issue today, and I will be answering on behalf of the Minister for Health, Jennifer Carl McNeill. And as stated, Duchenne muscular dystrophy is a rare and progressive disease affecting the muscle strength and function of boys almost exclusively, with approximately 10 children diagnosed with the condition each year. Minister Carl McNeill has engaged with representative groups and the parents of children suffering from this condition several times over the past year. The Minister has followed progress closely and will be meeting with patient groups again this week. The Government is committed to providing timely access to new and innovative medicines and has made considerable investments in recent years, with annual expenditure on medicines now approaching €4 billion. To move completely to Givinostat, it's sold under the brand name Duzivat for the treatment of DMD in ambulant patients aged 6 years or older, has recently undergone assessment by the European Medicines Agency. The European Commission granted conditional marketing authorisation for use of Givinostat in this indication on the 6th of June 2025. The Health Service Executive has statutory responsibility for decisions on pricing and reimbursement of medicines in accordance with the Health Pricing and Supply of Medical Goods Act 2013. In line with the Act, a company must submit an application to the HSE to have a new medicine added to the form, the formal reimbursement list. Reimbursement is for licensed indications which have been granted marketing authorisation by the EMA or Ireland's Health Products Regulatory Authority. So this is the important piece. The Minister met with her Italian counterpart at EBSCO Council meeting in June 2025 in Luxembourg to ask him to encourage the company Ital Pharmaco to submit a timely pricing and reimbursement application to Ireland. On the 6th of August 2025, an application for reimbursement was received by the HSE and underwent a rapid review by the National Centre for Pharmaeconomics. Following the conclusion of a rapid review on the 14th of August 2025, a full health technology assessment was commissioned by the HSE on the 26th. The assessment of the pricing and reimbursement application for Givinostat could not proceed until the NCPE received the full HTA from the company almost 4 months later on the 15th of January 2026. I need to set out the timelines very, very clearly. The HTA has been completed, and confidential commercial negotiations between the HSE's corporate pharmaceutical unit and Ital Pharmaco have begun, with the receipt of a commercial offer from Ital Pharmaco on Friday, the 8th of May, which is last Friday. The HSE continues to engage with the applicant to progress this application in a timely manner. So just to be very, very clear here, the conclusion of the rapid review on the 14th of August, a full health technology assessment was commissioned by the HSE. The assessment of the pricing and the reimbursement application for Givinostat could not proceed until the NCPE received a full HTA from the company. That arrived on the 15th of January this year. The HTA has been completed now, and confidential commercial negotiations are underway, and a commercial offer was received from the company on Friday last. And I want to thank you for sharing the stories of both families, whom I believe will be very concerned to understand exactly where the holdups are.
Thank you.
Reply from Deputy Doherty here.
These are parents that are looking at their children in a race against time. And like the case of Dermot is an example of this here. And Dermot's mother, she spoke to me and she said this. She said, as you know, Dermot's brother, Nathan, has the same condition. He has access to the drug through a UK trial for the last over 10 years. But Dermot is approaching the age where he is likely to lose mobility. She said, imagine as a mother opening the fridge every day and giving my eldest boy this life-changing medicine and not to my other little boy. Imagine the turmoil that that causes me day after day. She said that she met with the Minister for Health. A promise was made to allow compassionate access that would be fast-tracked for her child. She says that time is not on our side. Aaron's case, a young boy of 9 years of age, is the same. He was walking when they were pleading with government last year, and now he's in a wheelchair, not knowing even if the drug is approved, whether they can access it. Minister, this isn't good enough. I'm a parent of four young boys. I go through a wall for them, and your government has to allow compassionate access immediately to these drugs.
What's difficult to understand, Minister, is Javinostat is available in mostly all of the EU countries, and whatever is to be decided now must be fast-tracked. You did refer to the receipt of a commercial offer on the Friday, 8th of May. I believe over the next number of weeks, a decision should be taken and must be taken.
So there you have it. It's not often that times align, but both Pat the Cope Gallagher and Deputy Pearce Doherty choosing to raise the issue of those Donegal families. Of course, we heard from the parents of Aaron Langan last week. Things are moving. The government seem to be indicating there that the holdup has been with the company responsible for the drug, but that they have received commercial offers from that company on Friday the 8th. And as you heard from Pat the Cope Gallagher, he hopes that will be expedited. That process will be expedited over the next couple of weeks. So some white smoke we'll see, but still some foot dragging, and it's a story that we will stick with. But we thought, just as the we covered it quite extensively last week, interesting that on Friday the 8th of May, as we were talking about it, or the day after we were talking about it, there's quite a step forward. But we shall see now where that story goes. So I hope you don't mind. I know some of you tune in for the newspaper review, but we thought we'd be able to bring you that live. And it's an interesting too opportunity sometimes to get an insight into the workings of the Dáil, which was empty, by the way, bar the three voices that you heard from there. Let me have a look at those newspapers. The TEN-T project includes the Twin Town bypass, of course. It's covered in the Finn Valley Voice. Tomorrow, full details of submission of Donegal County Council through the NRA will appear in local media. Landowners and homeowners who are directly affected by the scheme are being contacted by the council's liaison team this week. On to the Nationals now. Let's have we'll start with the Sun. And a grieving mum has hit out at the 5-year prison sentence handed down to a banned driver who killed her daughter, saying, "We didn't get justice." Ex-fireman Sean Connaughton, 54, was already banned from getting behind the wheel for 4 years for not being insured when he drove over and killed bride-to-be Laura Connolly. The mother of one, just 35, had been out shopping for her dream wedding dress just hours before the fatal incident in her hometown of Lifford in the early hours of July 11th, 2021. 5 years for the death of that young lady who had her entire life before her. In the Star this morning, Gardaí have searched a Defence Forces camper over allegations that a serving soldier groomed and sexually assaulted a child. Specially trained detectives searched a specific location at Finner Camp near Ballyshannon on Sunday morning. It came after officers obtained a court warrant to enter the base and the soldier's home. Sources have stressed Gardaí do not suspect any offences took place at the camp, which is home to several hundred military personnel. The soldier, who has not been arrested, is under investigation for suspected rape as well as engaging in a sexual act with a child. Those offences carry maximum sentences of life and up to 15 years if the person is in a position of authority over the child. So no one arrested, but that search did take place at Finner Camp over the weekend. We often talk about drink driving figures, drug driving detections, and they're on the up, up, up. But it seems the amount of breath tests across the country are down, down, down. The number of breath tests being carried out on Irish roads has plummeted, despite the number of drivers increasing by nearly 1 million. This is the Irish Independent. Last year was the worst for fatalities on Irish roads since 2014, and 190 people were killed. There have been 58 deaths on Irish roads to date this year. Meanwhile, campaigners claim 37% of drink driving court cases fail to result in convictions. Alcohol Action Ireland has called for a dramatic increase in the number of tests being carried out. Why is that? Why do you think? I mean, obviously there are more people driving, but why are the detections for drink driving, drug driving, going up when across the country the amount of tests actually being conducted are on the way down? Two unions representing striking ambulance staff have been urged by the Minister for Health to re-enter talks to resolve the pay and grading dispute that prompted a 24-hour stoppage yesterday. There was cover here in the county, and we haven't been contacted by anyone who was in a particularly difficult situation that perhaps were disrupted in getting the care that they needed by this strike, which is encouraging. It doesn't mean it didn't happen. It's just that we certainly haven't heard of it yet. However, organisations said they have yet to be approached for talks without preconditions. The HSE said the strike involving about 2,000 frontline staff at the National Ambulance Service has a significant impact on services and waiting times over the course of yesterday. Keir Starmer, is just about hanging on. There's a big push over there by many within his party to get rid of him. Four of his ministers have resigned. 90 of his MPs have said they have no faith in him. But that is only a proportion, of course, of all the MPs. But he's still there. And he might survive, you know, because no one actually has thrown their hat into the ring to say, right, I want to lead this party. UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer challenged his critics to oust him yesterday and refused to resign despite ministers and MPs calling for his head. Mr. Starmer gathered his cabinet ministers around the table at number 10 for what was expected to be a high-stakes meeting with some of his allies ready to tell him his time was up. But Mr. Starmer instead defied any rebellion and insisted that as no leadership contest had been formally triggered, he would be going nowhere. Playing down the crisis, he told ministers, the country expects us to get on with governing, according to a spokesperson. And you heard yesterday Labour councillor in Islington, from Donegal, of course, Troy Gallagher, very little faith. Now, we are heading into exam season, so just maybe worthy of a conversation around the kitchen table, if we do that any more. Families have been warned about fake leaked exam papers being touted by cyber criminals. Teenagers across Ireland are preparing to face the stressful challenge of sitting down in exam halls for their leaving and junior certificate exams. Under these conditions, they may be susceptible to scammers looking to cash in on that anxiety. Parents and guardians should be alert to fake exam paper scams, fraudulent study resources, and malicious links targeting anxious and stressed young people online. Internet security experts warn there's a couple of things going on here. It is possible that they could be offered for sale, and you know, someone could find themselves having their account emptied, or it could be a paper that's not relevant to the exam and it could throw things out altogether. Just before the break, if you are on the roads, the main street in Ballybuffet, I'm told, is currently blocked. This due to a road traffic collision. So we're being told to expect delays. So we'll keep on top of that. As soon as we get word that that has reopened, we'll let you know. Obviously, there are some very well-known ways around Ballybuffet. So if you're using those routes, please be conscious of unusual high levels of traffic. But for now, the Main Street Ballybuffet, we're told, is blocked to traffic. Right. We were talking about exam stress. I got a message in from Glen Swilly GA Club. They are actually hosting a stress management and well-being workshop, which could be great, you know, great to tool a person up for the exam season. It's on Monday the 18th of May 2026. It's at the Glen Swilly GEA Clubhouse. Bill Vaughan from Mental Health Ireland will be given an introductory workshop on dealing with workplace or exam stress better, asking, would you love to be more relaxed? I think we can all say yes to that. Would you love to play better? Why, of course. Would you love to be able to sleep better? Well, after 5 hours last night, the answer is yes. I might go to this myself. And would you love to be able to say no more often? And would you love to have more energy? Well, if you want all those questions answered and some useful advice in the workplace or ahead of exam season, and you can get along to the Glen Swilly GEA Clubhouse Monday the 18th of May 2026. Now, a caller says, Greg, I texted you yesterday, read the new ramp on Cockhill Road in Buncrana. Okay, so the problem was is it wasn't well lined, well signed. People were hitting the ramp. They didn't know it was there. That was the concern. Well, I now want to confirm this morning that it was painted yesterday and that they've removed the plastic from the signs and removed the moulders that have been there for 8 or 9 months. Thank heavens and thanks to Highland Radio. Well, thanks to you. This is why we invite you guys to give us a contact. And, you know, the council do their best. They really do. And they come in for a little bit of criticism. But when they are alerted to something and it's within their gift to do it, I know for a fact they're not doing stuff for the fun of it. So it's great. Maybe it was a coincidence. Maybe it was the power of the programme. I don't know. Michael Brennan. Michael Brennan, a.k.a. Donegal Daddy. How are you getting on? That was a smooth...
I'm not so bad.
Sorry, I'll cut that out when we broadcast it. Now, we're talking about your mum who runs a B&B in beautiful Glenties. And you've been comparing, I suppose, her business model, how she runs her business, versus perhaps maybe other accommodation providers in the sector.
Well, I was kind of... It actually started off more as... People's telling, we were in Disney last week and everyone was saying, oh, it's very expensive. And, you know, is it worth it? And then I priced to go to the game in Kerry and I could see that Disneyland looked like a bargain compared to staying for one night in Kerry. But, and then I was just kind of making the point that, like, mum and the B&B, we don't do whatever you want to call it, dynamic pricing or, well, price gouging, I suppose. It just is the price, and that's the way it is. And then, yeah, the people at Kerry did not like it at all.
Yeah, well, I mean, they pride themselves, obviously, on being a tourism destination, but you called out what it was. I mean, you've just been out foreign, as they say. You know the prices of hotels out there, and you priced hotels in Kerry. The facts, I mean, it's not like you're spinning the situation, just calling it out.
Yeah, that was it. Like, and I went on looking for, if you're traveling in a pair, just two people is fine. But when you're traveling with a family, it just, the prices were, well, there was only two places available. Like, and one of them was €2,110. And then somebody says, yeah, but that was a 5-star hotel. And I was like, I know it was a 5-star hotel, but this Saturday, it's only €1,350.
Yeah.
So it wasn't, I was comparing lake for lake. I wasn't comparing.
So there's whichever way you look at it, and it's still ridiculously priced at over 1300, but there's a €900 premium because Donegal are in town. That's the only thing you can conclude.
Well, like, that's the only difference, because the Sunday was the same. It was the 1350 or 1400 as well. And, like, don't get me wrong, 5-star accommodation, yeah, that's fine. Absolutely. But some that another person then tried to say, oh, well, I looked up the closest comparison in Donegal, and it was only €850 for next Saturday night. So
no one from Kerry was trying to book accommodation around Letterkenny for the Donegal rally and decided to point out that to you. No, they did.
Okay, but as I pointed out, we've often kept people in the B&B for the Donegal rally, and the price was the same as it always is. But yeah, and I can, and, like, listen, I understand supply and demand is what it is, but, like, to have a jump of €700-800 is, it's a good, goes a bit beyond supply and demand.
Yeah, the one thing I would say, the one caveat in that is if you don't check directly with hotels, because you would know the likes of booking.com, they would take a number of rooms and it's up to them what they charge for it, and often there can be better value in contacting the hotel directly. But be that as it may, in my experience, generally, the booking.com price is a fair indicator of what the market is charging down there.
And, like, booking.com don't actually, they add on a percentage, so it's your choice of the charge. Like, so I know what does sometimes seems to happen with hotels is that they'll decide, we jack up the price so nobody will book it through booking.com. Do you know, they might. And then, but at the same time, that's where, like, if you go in and Google hotels in wherever, it automatically sends you through booking.com pretty much every time. It's like the Google of booking. It's nearly, like, I even looked at a few other places and tried to click through the top Google links, and it was sent me either through booking.com or somehotels.com. Mm. You know, it wasn't setting you to their website.
But this is also, too, which is what really irks people is this is an industry that says it's on its knees, it's struggling. They've just got a big 9% tax break, a VAT break, as some would describe it, right? Others wouldn't. They're on one hand, many in the hotel industry are saying, look, we're struggling to survive here. Yet on the other, there's a price for $2,110 for a room for a Saturday night. It's, it's very hard to make sense of that.
Yeah, and I did get other people messaging saying, oh, you can get a room here for €380. And I was like, yeah, but that's two people, not a family. Mm. And even a €380, like, is that a bargain? I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't discourage anyone out of this country. I love this country, but there are websites, right? And you know, I would say if you and your family left Friday to come back, say, Tuesday, you could get flights and accommodation in the sun probably for £190 each, you know?
Yeah, don't get me wrong, I like the same as that, I would love, and like people give out about Centre Parks as well, about it being expensive, but we went to Centre Parks last year and I thought it was absolutely worth every penny. It was like, it was so good, everything was there. It was so, I thought, like, we paid, I think, maybe €1,100 for our stay there, and it was flawless. I don't mind paying when the value's there, but when you know, like, when you see clearly that it's a jump in price,
gouging. Yeah, right. Okay. And listen,
on the supply and demand thing, I don't mind, like, say, if it was next weekend and they go, right, well, it's an extra €100 for a room.
Yeah.
We'll go, well, fair enough, I can see, but when it goes away over like €500, €600, €700, €800 of a jump, it's a bit Irish, as they would say, I suppose.
Yeah, I think it needs calling out. I think those some within the industry need to call it out, because it casts a dark cloud over the rest of the industry. Anyway, if you do get down to the game, maybe you're driving up and down, you're gonna have to wear a disguise now.
Exactly. I'm going to be lynched, but I'll probably get the bus with McGuinness. Let's just go up and down, nice and handy, relax and sleep.
All right. Okay. Well, listen, thank you for that interesting conversation. Look after yourself. Thank you very much indeed. That's Michael Brennan, also known on socials, of course, as Donegal Daddy. If you want to comment in relation to that, 086 60 25000 is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25000, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. Just another reminder for you, more contacts from listeners here. Greg, allow extra time this morning. Big hold up in Ballybuffet at or near the Bank of Ireland pedestrian crossing. This is just, I'm not saying anything happened on that crossing, I'm just saying this is where the hold up seems to be emanating from. An ambulance and the Gardaí are there in the vicinity of that controversial crossing there at the Bank of Ireland. So if you are trying to circumnavigate it, you know the routes. You're coming from Donegal Town, you'd be as well turning left at the bar there. But as I say, that road will be busier than normal. So just be conscious of that. So we got a message yesterday from a listener, and they said, hey, Greg, just my opinion, or does anyone else think the same? But has First Holy Communion become like mini weddings? I was at communions on Saturday and was shocked at the competition between mammies. The dresses, the tan, the makeup was breathtaking. I thought it was supposed to be the child's special day. Don't get me wrong, it's nice for all to be well turned out for the occasion. But now it seems to be all about mammy's image. I know one mum who had a dress in her child's communion dress made from her wedding dress, so both dresses would look similar. They believe this is crazy. Now, as I said yesterday, you know, I'm pretty chilled on this. It's whatever people want to do themselves. But anyway, there are different views in relation to it, and maybe I don't have my finger on the pulse. Stevie Toy is a photographer. Good morning to you, Stevie. How are you getting on?
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Right, so you've been at many communions, so you could see a trend. Have things changed?
Yeah. Things have changed definitely in the last number of years. And I don't know if some of it's a knock-on from COVID, but people definitely do get out and spend that bit more money on the occasion of a communion. But it's nice for families at the same time. Because some people have families down the country and they might not get to see each other very often. So they spend a few pounds and they have a night out.
Yeah. I'm not sure necessarily if it's about competition between mammies or just really an opportunity for a hard-pressed mammy who maybe doesn't get out much if they're very, very busy to doll themselves up and celebrate the child's communion. Or am I being too soft there?
No, I would agree with you. I'd be like yourself. I'd be very chill about the whole thing. I'm a fan of the whole communion thing, especially, as I said, for families but there might be aunties and uncles that might not see the child many weeks and months of the year. So sometimes it's nice for them to get out. And I'm not so sure about the mammies competing. I don't notice that side of things. I'm sort of, like when I'm doing the photos, I do focus primarily on the child and try and get as many photos of the child on their own and some nice little poses and some nice shots, and then family shots as well. But I don't notice any behaviour by the mammies that are taking over or anything like that, you know?
Mm-hmm. And it's still traditional, isn't it, the communions? I haven't been to a communion for a while. It's still, confirmations, there's confirmations in uniforms and stuff, but they still dress up in the white for the girls and what have you for the boys, don't they? That is still the way it is.
Yeah, that's the way it is. Yeah.
All right. So you observe people making an effort, but you say their motivation is not necessarily competition and it's not necessarily OTT. It's just to look their best for the day that's in it.
I think so. Yeah. And like, as I say, because I'm focused on other things, maybe I'm not noticing that there's competition between mammies, etc. But I certainly don't know. I don't see it. And maybe I'm sort of dull to it because I do a lot of weddings, so it might be just that I don't notice these things anymore, you know. But in terms of OTT, I have seen communions where there's limousines.
Now we're getting into an area where I'd have more of an opinion.
Yeah, that is a wee bit OTT. And there was rumours of a helicopter one year. Now, I wasn't doing that wedding, but
They couldn't afford you. They spent all the money on the helicopter.
Well, for that kind of money, I'd fly the helicopter if they wanted. But the thing about it is that my worry in that concern is if you're getting a helicopter or a limousine for a child on their communion, what do you do on their wedding day or their 18th or their 21st? You know, they're opening a can of worms for themselves, you know.
Yeah, indeed. Listen, Stevie, thanks. Lovely to chat to you. Kathy joins me as well. And Kathy, you know, there's a couple of things going on here. We're talking about really about maybe the dress up and the competition that may or may not be there, limousines, even blooming helicopters. I suppose, you know, for a lot of people that like to see it actually stripped back to what that day actually is about.
Well, as far as the first thing is, this is a Catholic sacrament. That's the most important thing. These children, these beautiful young souls, are going into the church to receive the body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. And that is what the whole thing is about and should be about. Now, I don't have a problem with parents getting dressed up because it's the best thing. You know, it's all about God and it's about receiving his son. And looking your best and blah, 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 and all the other bits and pieces. The problems I would have is there's probably, and this might be a bit controversial, there's more focus on the dressing up and all that lot as opposed to what the child is actually receiving. Yeah. And I would also have a problem. The dresses are beautiful. The children are, you know, they look stunning and they're absolutely gorgeous. But having these fake tans and makeup, I mean, what kind of message are you sending?
But the thing about it, Kathy, I mean, that's not coming from the school or from the curriculum or from the child themselves. That's a decision made at home, isn't it? Whether or not how you dress someone up, whether they wear makeup or indeed, you know, fake tan. I mean, people under 15, 16, I don't know what the age might be, but putting fake tan on them, it seems a wee bit...
Well, I mean, look, we know what the world is like today. I mean, the world is in a complete and utter mess. And you've got the internet, you've got the social media, etc. And there's pressures. Of course there's pressures. Mm. And these kids, they're seeing all this. You know, unless you put your makeup on and all this blah, 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 you're not beautiful. And they are beautiful. Mm. And they're beautiful in the eyes of God. And that's what they should be focusing on, mm-hmm. and less on what society is telling them that they should do.
Yeah, but
it's all to do.
Is this part sort of a little bit of, you know, a la carte Catholicism, you know, christenings, communions, weddings, funerals, confirmations, and never see the inside of the chapel.
No, that's another
I'm not
thing.
Judging people, I know. It's not a bit wonder that the focus then would have gone on to something outside of the true religious meaning of the Holy Communion.
Yeah, well, and I know my brother, he lives in London, and when his children were receiving their Holy Communion, the priest wouldn't give them Holy Communion unless they were attending Mass on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And I mean, if you're saying that you're a Catholic, that you have faith, that you have belief in God and Jesus and the Blessed Virgin and the Ten Commandments, etc., you need to learn about your faith. And people aren't doing that. People going to Mass, I see people going up to Communion, and I will be accused of being judgmental, but there's a good chance that quite a number of them don't know that you cannot receive, you should not receive Holy Communion unless you've been to confession. You cannot be in a state of...
Yes, but the church itself has got very loose in relation to that, though, Cathy.
Oh, yes, definitely. I would totally agree. I feel... I can only comment in this country because I've lived here most of my life. But I think there's a certain amount of fear among the priests. Mm-hmm. They're afraid to tell the people what to do. And instead of following God's laws, they're more or less giving in to what the people want. They say what the people want them to say.
There's a lot of people in Catholicism who would be more than happy for the Catholic Church to be a smaller, more strict organisation, you know, not to try necessarily to appeal to the masses. And you do see that whereby, say, for instance, if your brother, for example, was in London where there's multiple religions and there's a great competition, say, for instance, to even get a slot in a Catholic school, I think the religious authorities there feel more empowered then to say, right, OK, well, we're in demand. You want your child educated here. We're going to be a bit stricter on the rules. And if they want to make the communion, they're going to have to do this and they're going to have to do that. You know, and I think some people want to see the Catholic Church act like that globally rather than trying to be all things to all people. Yeah. I don't know what your view is. I don't particularly have a view in relation to it, but I do know that sentiment is out there.
No, I absolutely agree with you. We have the Ten Commandments. We have the rules of God. We have a choice whether to obey them or not to obey them. And the amount of people that say, you know, the church is lucky that I go to Mass. No, the church isn't lucky that you go to Mass. You're lucky that you go to Mass. It's there are two priests that I follow religiously, and they're both American.
But if you were, though, to follow the Catholic Church to the letter of the law, and I'm not having a go at you or trying to in any way denigrate you. Would you not really need to just keep your head down and worry about your faith and the faith of your family and not judge other people? Now, this is a chat show. Me and you are having a chat. So, you know, clearly it's fine. Don't get me wrong. But in reality, if you followed the exact teachings of the church, is it really our position to judge anyone else?
Well, we're not supposed to judge people, but we are supposed to help people, and we're also supposed to spread the faith.
Right, okay. So you could argue that covers you here. Yeah, I get you. What were you going to say about the two priests in America? Sorry, by the way.
Oh, yeah. There's two priests I follow. Now, I would say it's since COVID that I've always been a Catholic. I've always believed, but I started to delve deeper into the faith. And there's a priest, Father Chris Ayler, from the Divine Mercy, the Shrine of Divine Mercy in Massachusetts. And it's Father Mike Smith, which a number of you listeners would know. He does a podcast, The Bible in a Year, and I'm in my second year of doing it. Very exuberant priest, very religious priest, but he explains the Bible because you can't read the Bible unless you have help.
Okay.
You cannot read it on your own without help. And then Father Chris Ayler, he has a whole load of things on YouTube, explaining the faith, and he explains it in a great way. And for anybody who's had suicide in the family, he explains that absolutely brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not damned. They're not immediately damned like they used to preach back in the days. Mm. No, they're not. Yeah. There's great hope for them, great hope for their souls. But those two priests, before you finish, those two priests are actually coming to Ireland. Mm. In Dublin on the 7th of July is Father Mike Smith, and in June, Father Chris Aylov coming to Knock. Would love to go
you
to
don't
them,
have
but
to,
I doubt
you don't have to pay to see them, do you?
You might have to pay and see Father Smith. Mm.
See, this is where these doing a,
yeah,
without
no,
disrespect, this money. Is where they start yeah. start losing me. Because I don't think Jesus was rattling the basket when he was spreading the word.
No,
but I'm not
no,
in any way trying to undermine your point,
no,
and
know,
it's what's
I
important
know.
To you. Thanks, Kathy. Jordan, sorry I've been holding you there. I didn't realise I had a caller on line 73. Jordan, what's your views on communion?
Oh, hi, Greg. Just back to the original comment. You know, what struck me to comment on that post about the original commenter was, you know, the perception of online. I think things can get really... You know, they can be perceived differently online to what they actually are in reality. We had our daughter's communion on Saturday there, and like that was a day, like we were celebrating joy. We were celebrating, obviously, the sacrament. You know, that was a beautiful day for everyone. It was a community day. You know, we had everyone, you know, in our community. We had mothers there who went illness that year. We had people who have lost people. We have, you know, there was so much celebration and you know, gratitude in that day. And I just felt with that comment, it kind of took away like there was some kind of competition again.
Yeah, I think what you're doing now is, Jordan, you're singing my tune now, really, because you actually don't know what a year a person's had. You don't know potentially how precious it is to have that moment with your daughter. Not every mum, not every daughter is blessed with that. And also, too, even if people dolled themselves up to the nine, it's not either or. It does not mean that they aren't fully understanding and getting what communion is. And at the same time saying, do you know what? I'm going to look my blooming best because it's a special day for me and my daughter. So I think me and you might be kind of on the same page, Jordan, if you agree with what I'm saying.
Absolutely. And even people that are less affluent nearly turn up the bit. You know, they save all year round. They could have saved for 2 years. That means so much to them. I don't think, you know, nobody knows anyone's story. Yeah. And I think that was a day of lot. Like, it really was. I can't tell you how beautiful it was. And when I read the comment, like that woman using her wedding dress and how resourceful that was, you know, I just thought that was beautiful. A story for her and her daughter. I just thought, that online negativity that came through was very sad, you know.
Without criticising the listener who perhaps was making the point, and I'm sure was making the point from their heart. I think maybe sometimes when you feel like that about others, you kind of have to maybe look a little bit at yourself and where you're at and how happy you are or what makes you happy or maybe what you missed out on. And is there something there that's maybe taking the joy that you should be able to see away from the situation, if that makes sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, they probably have their own wee story and their own wee, you know, I just wanted to give a different perspective with my comment or my opinion. Ooh, and again, like back to, like, I feel like mums, gee, like, do they get anything right? They're judged at every corner and,
so true,
you know, they
you
get
know.
All dressed up. And well, it seems that way sometimes for women and busy mums and, you know, mums at home and mums working and, you know, mammies are just doing their best. And all those mums, you know, they were probably planning that whole year and they probably did most of the work to get ready. I'm not, dads obviously do a wee bit too, but, you know, they were doing majority of that work and probably hadn't slept the whole week, you know, organising and having that perfect. And no matter what way you want to celebrate it simple, you want to be extravagant.
The world's gone mad. You can't go into Tesco in your pyjamas and you can't dress up for a communion. What blooming hell's going on?
Well, this is it. And, you know, my brother got married before that. And, like, I've never heard a discussion online as to how extravagant a bride is or how much too big a wedding. You know, they're both lovely religious ceremonies and blessings and we don't ever judge people for, you know, spending too much at other. You know, I just think love and let love.
And you certainly will never hear that the father of the bride overdid the outfit or the father of the bride overdid the three-piece suit for a communion. You know what I mean? All right. Okay, listen, Jordan.
Yeah, there was no... And there was great...
No limousines, no helicopters?
Yeah, there was great-looking dads at the weekend.
Was there?
No limousines. No. None.
helicopters.
And also, no tan, no makeup, no, you know, I think, again, online, one thing, this whisper turns into this, you know, like,
so
this
true,
is what the
Jordan.
Whole thing's about.
Yep,
there was none of that.
Yep.
There, you know, I do think that, like, in reality, in real life, had you have been there, you know, and, like, it just, it was such
what,
a beautiful
I think what it sums up
day.
Is your experience of your traditional, normal Donegal communion day with lots of different people, with lots of different backgrounds, this weekend, what you went to, you don't recognise in any way, shape or form in that comment.
No, yeah, exactly.
Okay. Listen, Jordan, thank you so much for your time. Lovely to speak to you. Greg, that woman is wrong to say you can't receive communion if you don't go to confession. If you don't go to confession, you can say an act of contrition and that covers you to get communion. Mammies always get the blame and judge, says another. We're already struggling to encourage people into churches and the Catholic faith in Ireland and into religion generally. Making it stricter, judging how people show up, what they're wearing to communion, etc., isn't going to improve the Catholic religion's future. To say you are religious and go to Mass and then judge how other people are displaying their religion doesn't feel very religious to me. Better to be kind and perhaps mind your own business. Wear what you choose. Show up how you feel comfortable. Be happy for others. The kids should wear their school uniforms for Holy Communion, says another listener. That's in a different space of taking pressure off. But we're in a space now whereby there are affordable options for clothes. And it is a uniform of such, I think, isn't it? As far as I'm aware. And lastly, hi, Greg. Even Trivago would find the holiday price a bit excessive in Kerry if you haven't seen their ads recently on the telly. We've the same amount of beaches. It looks like they're only interested in the US dollar dollar and not the Irish natives. That's Kevin from Dunglow, not Dunlow. Okay. Dunlow. Dunglow. You like the G, Kevin. All right, I'll stick the G in. Okay, we're in the garden for the second time this season. Paul is up from Ballagher Garden Centre and he's going to be answering your questions. So if you have any questions pertinent to your garden, your lawn, your hedges, and as I like to point out too, you know, some people have the luxury of living maybe outside of town and have a bit of greenery to the front or rear of the homes. But for you, it could be, what can you do with your sunroom or your windowsill in your kitchen or whatever it might be, or even in your lower cabinet, maybe there's mushrooms or something you could grow in there too. So don't feel it's confined to just people who have the luxury, or it's not a luxury if you have to cut it, but those who have a lawn or outdoor spaces or beds, you know, there's things you can do to sort of bring a bit of oxygen, a bit of air, a bit of life into your home as well. So don't be afraid to get in touch. Any questions in relation to anything like that? 086 6025000 is the WhatsApp and text number. On the issue of communion, and we won't over-labour this because I really don't want to make people who had a lovely weekend sort of feel that they've in some way done something wrong. I don't want to instill that negativity or that doubt in a person's mind. So I'll read a few of the comments that come in here and then draw a line under it. To be a practicing Catholic, you have to go to confession and receive Holy Communion between Ash Wednesday and Trinity Sunday. Another, it's about time some priest took a stand. No child who doesn't practice on a regular basis should be given the sacraments. It's a big shout, that, isn't it? Because, you know, that sounds really anti-religion, that, because they are guided by their parents, and, you know, wow, the church's, the Bible, the God's attitude towards children, I mean, give them those foundations, and if they want to build on them later in life, but can you imagine suggesting, it seems very strong to me, withholding this day for children, because maybe their parents aren't very religious. Not everybody's a Catholic, Greg. No, of course they're not, but that doesn't mean we can't talk about Catholicism. We talk about all religions on this programme, and I am so confident that I have no problem at all focusing on Catholicism. Let's not forget either that Catholicism is the biggest religion in this country, but we talk about all different religions at different times throughout the year. And of course, this conversation is based on Catholic and Catholic practices. Typical Ireland, we can't stand to see people happy and celebrating their child's day in their own way. Life is hard enough without these downers trying to ruin things for everyone. Nobody should be shamed for choosing to spend their own money how they see fit. The majority of people need to mind their own business and go on and enjoy it and enjoy the day with your children. It's an interesting point. And do you know what? Sometimes it's no harm dragging these comments sort of off social media and into public discourse. Because I think some people get an impression of what people talk about or what people feel about social media. But they're surrounded by people who think the same. Yet here we are. We have people of all different viewpoints, religions, races, whatever it might be, listening to the show. And I think we generally get a good sense of what people out there are thinking. Could you please play a very special request for my classmate, Susan Martin from Fannett? It's her birthday today, from her classmate, Mary Begley. Thank you. All right, let's go to Councillor Fionnán Bradley, who's the last Cathaoirleach of the Inishowen Municipal District. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg, and good morning to your listeners.
It's a very significant day today because I can't even put it into years. I'd have to search the archives how long we've been talking about the disappointment of Ladies Bay and Buncrana being deemed poor and not suitable for swimming. And it was a real blight, I think, really, obviously, relatively speaking. But things have changed. There's some good news this year. Am I correct in saying?
You are, Greg, and thankfully I'm delighted to be able to report that the EPA have stated that water quality at Ladies Bay and Buncrana for last year, so the 2025 year, was graded as sufficient. Now, I know your listeners might say sufficient doesn't sound that good, but as you've said, for the 3 years before that, the water quality was poor. One of only two beaches in all of Ireland, the other being Sandymount and North Dublin, that returned a poor water quality, which meant that the waters weren't suitable for bathing in. And we couldn't bathe, either locals or tourists could not bathe at the Ladies Bay and Buncrana.
And just to put that into context for listeners, there was only two, in all of the 26 counties under the auspices of the EPA, there was only two beaches in the whole country that were deemed poor due to untreated wastewater discharges, this particularly during heavy rain. And one of them was Ladies Bay. And it was a blight, right? And it's great to see that reversed.
Absolutely, yeah, because I mean, the Buncrana, our bread and butter, particularly in the summertime, is tourists and visitors coming into the town from Northern Ireland and from the UK and from all other parts of the world, indeed. And Ladies Bay is the premier beach in Buncrana. It's right in the heart of the town, and it's the most easily accessible and central of all the beaches around the Buncrana area. And for anybody to come and enjoy the day and then discover when they would get as far as Ladies Bay, that there were big signs up telling them they couldn't bathe. You've used the word blight, and indeed you were absolutely correct. It was a terrible blight. So thankfully, those signs will be away. The water quality is now good enough. It's rated as sufficient that bathing can take place. And I do want to say, and I want to be on the public record to say, and I want to thank Ashgairn, and I am very, very critical of them. As you know, I've been on your show and on Highland talking about Ashgairn and failings about other issues. But I really do want to thank them for the investment of $33 million in the Buncrana wastewater treatment infrastructure, both at the Westbrook pumping station and indeed on Railway Road, because without that investment, this simply wouldn't have happened. The situation before this was at times of heavy rainfall, raw sewage was flowing from the pumping station at Westbrook straight down the Crannagh River and into the Swilly, which was causing the water quality at Ladies Bay to be poor. So thankfully now with the investment and with the new tank that has been installed there, that doesn't now happen. So credit must go to Ashgairn and fairness to them and indeed to Donegal County Council for the investment of $33 million and for carrying out the works and thankfully for solving the problem. And I would be very confident that even from next year we should see the sufficient rating improving again, and I would like to see us going back to good and indeed hopefully achieving excellent, which to the best of my knowledge we've never done at Ladies Bay in the near future.
Yeah, indeed. It's good to get a new good news story, isn't it? And hopefully someone organises a celebratory mass swim or something along those lines to help spread the word down the line that it is open for business for this year. Thank you very much indeed. That is Councillor Fionnán Bradley, Las Cathaoirleach of Inishowen Municipal District. So it was an outlier and it was unfair and it felt unfair because it was nothing to do about its beauty or anything to do with that. It was literally to do with sewage in the water when it rains. So that has been, I'm sure many of you still swam there anyway. Someone contacted me to say, why do Letterkenny University Hospital book 150 people for a fracture clinic in Scally Place at the same time? Yes, 150 people booked at 10:30 a.m. for an appointment. This caller arrived 40 minutes before the appointment and over 40 people were ahead of them. What are these people thinking, or are they? I don't know what the logic of that is. Of course, there's also probably a whiteboard down there still with the amount of people that don't turn up. I think a lot of people maybe go into LUH thinking, have I broke my ankle? It turns out they've twisted their ankle. They got to follow up and then they don't attend. I'm not sure how, you know, normal that might be. But anyway, booking everyone for the same time, 150 people yesterday morning. What do you think about that? Why does that happen? Give us an insight. There might be logic to it, and it could be awful. The Eurovision, it must have been semi-finals, started last night, completely off my radar this year. But Greg, of course, Israel has qualified for the final of the Eurovision Song Contest in Vienna on Saturday. Despite being booed during the first semi-final, they still made it. What's wrong with this world? Lots of people support Israel, and they're very good at the PR to get people to support them, and that is it. That's why they go through. They've won it. My word, they won it when there was calls for them to be banned a number of years ago. So whatever is about Israel, there's a lot of people very much in favour of them and what they're doing, and they see opportunities like this as an opportunity to send that message right around the world. Hi, Greg. This is on hotel prices. Hi, Greg. Prices are madness for Killarney for the Donegal game. However, this really shows the lack of infrastructure in Ireland. There should at least be trains from Sligo to Kerry, but of course there aren't. You have to go to Dublin and transfer, which ends up being a lot slower. We've no high-speed trains to travel around the country and no trains in Donegal at all, which shows how far behind we are compared to most countries. I believe most people would travel by train if it was a viable option. Yeah, or an available option. I think you're right. How long is the drive to Kerry? It's how long does it take to go down there? I was looking at hotels just for the crack. I mean, there are options. So you can get an Airbnb that you could put a family into. You know, it's got three beds and you can use them as you wish for 170 euros. And that's 15 miles from it's 15 miles from Killarney. So would that be an option that you, you know, enjoy your day and then find your way back out to the Airbnb and then back up the road? I don't know. But there are 170 quid, 15 miles from Killarney. Is that still crazy? Is that too far? Or would that be an option for some? That's for the Saturday night. Tell Michael to stay in Abbeyfield or Newcastle West in Limerick. Great value hotels and B&B. Mental Health Ireland is calling on Donegal to take part in the national Hello, How Are You campaign on May 15th. And of course, throughout the course of the year. It aims to start meaningful conversations about mental health, and it's in its fifth year. I'm joined on the programme by Marie Duffy, PR and Communications Officer with Mental Health Ireland. Good morning to you, Marie. Nice to see you.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Good. Now, I suppose we often use the words, hello, how are you, or how are things, or how's things going with you? But it's often, you know, rhetorical. It's just a greeting. I think really what we're trying to do, aren't we, for May 15th, to say it's a meaningful question.
Well, I guess the campaign by Mental Health Ireland is about encouraging open conversations about mental health. The campaign is built around the idea that even a small conversation can make a significant difference in someone's well-being. And we do ask the question, how are you? But we often don't listen to the answer. And it's really about promoting open conversations about mental health so that when we do have to have difficult conversations, that we're more used to it and we're more open to it and we know how to have the conversation.
And there are sort of tools out there to help you if you wonder, well, I wouldn't know what to say if they say, well, things aren't great at the moment. You know, I mean, if you can't really necessarily draw on that information, there are resources out there. And, you know, that conversation could be a huge difference in someone's life.
Yeah, it's such a simple question, but really listening to the answer with meaning, it makes such a difference. We've been providing training over the past few weeks to people around the country around having these conversations. And the thing is, some people are afraid to ask people how they are because they're afraid of the answer. And what we're saying is, with a little bit of support, you can have those supportive conversations. And we provide free e-learning module that is 1 hour long, which will support you to have those difficult conversations so you don't feel that you're not supported throughout them and you know the right thing to say.
Yeah, I've spoken to so many people over the years and in recent podcasts who've been through very difficult times. And the community want to help and support them, and they are there for them. But what they found in the weeks and months after it is that people would avoid eye contact or cross the street, and not because they don't care or they don't love and support them. It's just because they simply didn't know what the right thing might be to say.
Yeah, and what we're saying is just do a little bit of preparation. We have a free e-learning module. We provide training to community groups and people all around the country. It's free. It's of high quality. And what we're saying is if you are prepared to have the conversation, just do a little bit of homework. What we say, we have the Hello framework, which is part of the campaign, and H for hello, E for engage, L to listen, L to learn about what's out there, and O for options to support for further support. The thing is, there's loads of supports out there, but we don't always know about them, especially in our locality. And with a little bit of research, you can find out what's out there to support people. There's loads out there to support people, but we just need to know what's there.
Yeah, and you can create an environment for those types of conversations, aren't you? Maybe invite someone out for a walk, host a cup of coffee, or indeed host a walking or coffee event. You know, you can do it in a one-on-one if you feel you want to create a space where someone might feel comfortable opening up to you, or in a group way. And if people are interested in it, they can attend. So the options are there, multiple options.
Yeah, so we have over 300 events on Friday, the 15th of May, around the country. We've loads in Donegal. So go onto our website, mentalhealthireland.ie, check out our interactive map and see what's on near you. We've got events in Dunfanaghy, Letterkenny, Carndonagh, Buncrana, Maharorty, Gweedore. There's lots of things to do, whether it's a coffee morning, whether it's about sharing our campaign resources so you know how to have that conversation. And really, research has shown us that the campaign can help reduce loneliness and social isolation. And by having open conversations about mental health, people are more confident in starting supportive conversations and promoting help seeking and signposting to support.
Yeah, and it's just a little way you can, for free, help someone else and make a difference in society. Those resources you mentioned, and also to the list of those 291 events across the country, and those specific to Donegal, they're available on the Mental Health Ireland website. Is that correct?
Yeah, so that's mentalhealthireland.ie. If you click on our campaigns, you'll go to Hello, how are you? And all our information is there, including links to the free e-module training.
Okay, listen, thank you very much indeed. Marie Duffy, PR and Communications Officer with Mental Health Ireland. So they're using Hello, say hello, E, engage with the person. In other words, you know, say, how are you? Oh, things are all right at the moment. All right, okay, what's going on? You know, or rather than what we might say is, hello, how are you? Okay, yeah, I know how you feel. Blooming hell. Next. You know what I mean? So there's different ways you can sort of maybe give someone an opportunity to actually answer that question. Hello, so say hello. H, E, engage, as I've just mentioned. Listen to them. You know, sometimes what do you say? Well, sometimes you don't say nothing. You just listen. And L is also about listening. Learn about them and what they might be saying. And O is give them time to talk and explain options. I mean, there's a the explaining options, maybe it's even signposting, because you know you don't want anything that might go, oh, I don't know about that. But you know, just listening. Hello, how are you? I'm okay. You're only okay. What's going on this weather? That's on the 15th, 18th. But sure, we can do that all the time, can't we? Amazing how reform in Britain are doing well, says the listener. Have a lot of former Conservative MPs who destroyed Britain over 13 years in power. We had quite a bit of a conversation about the Dublin Rose. She is Irish, born in Ireland. Some people were disputing that, of Somalian heritage. And she was been speaking publicly elsewhere about the abuse she got simply for being who she is. A caller says, I believe the texter is saying about a person born in Ireland of foreign extraction doesn't automatically make them Irish. No matter where the Irish went, even to this day, they are called Irish by their adopted countries. I read that one yesterday and pointed out that I've got cousins that were born in England and they very proudly call themselves English, which I find bizarre. But anyway, that's the way it is. Good morning, Greg. Let's swap England or Scotland for China. So if you and your wife were Chinese and came here on holiday and your wife was pregnant and she had the baby here and you went back to China straight afterwards, would that make your child Irish or would it be Chinese? Would it be Irish born, presumably. But that's not the example that I gave. You've just given a different example, which is quite fleeting and it happens all of the time. But forever, that child's place of birth would be Ireland. I don't know what the citizenship laws have to say about that either. Another, the Irish are always Irish, no matter how long they've been away. It doesn't matter how many generations you have to go back for a birth in Ireland. We're so proud of our heritage that we will always be Irish. I think this is why we can't understand other nationalities arriving here and saying they are Irish after a short time. Yeah, I was speaking to a gentleman, 96 years of age. He was on last week's podcast, actually. 96 years of age, living in Australia. From Bundoran, a proud Irish man, but a very, very proud Australian, and in fact has received rewards and commendations from Australia, the government of Australia, for his contribution to Australia. But he's a very proud Australian man, although he's an Irish national, I suppose, or is he? Maybe he's got dual nationalship now. I presume he has. Staying with politics, or moving to politics, Keir Starmer took the fuel allowance away from the pensioners. What do they expect? Thank you, Mary. Yeah, indeed, Mary, you don't mess with the pensioners. I got caught by a scam this week. I should have known better. I got a text in a manner which my dad would have messaged. We all get new phones, so I didn't really think. He said he had to pay a bill and needed help with it, which is something my dad would do. Classic dad behaviour. He wanted €1,400, which did sound like the mortgage payment. So I said, between counts, I only had 600, and he said, send that. So I did 500 and 100 in another. I was on the bank, onto the bank, and there is a chance I might get it back, a charge back. Yeah, hopefully you do. But just to warn others, even if it sounds like your dad double checked. So just to be clear, did they use your dad's number, or did they say, right, hi, I've got a new number here. This is dad, I've got a new number here. I'm a bit stuck at the moment. Could you send me 1400? Here's the bank details. Yeah, I can see how you can get done. Listen, are we being honest? Let's be honest. I've said it before. On TikTok, there was an item that I've been looking at. On TikTok, it came up, you know, normally would cost about 300 quid, and it came up for 80 quid in TikTok. And I said, oh, I'm having a go. I'll have that. And I, while I was, an ad break was on, clicked through, sent the money away. Obviously, there was absolutely nothing there. It was a complete and utter scam. Now, I was able to get the money back from my bank, because if you don't receive the goods after a certain amount of time, you can get that recouped. But it's just so easy to get caught in that moment. And that is why we talk so much about scams, because we are getting caught out. If you want to share the scams that you've got done for, I've been honest, our listener has been honest, share them out there and let us spread the word. Right, Paul from the Garden Centre just down the road here, Ballochderg, is in with me very shortly now answering your gardening questions. You've got still time, or you still have got time, to get your questions into us, 086 60 25,000, or call 07491 25,000. Rightio. So we heard calls yesterday from a councillor about a public sort of public platform for people to have a say about the development of Donegal Town. Now, you could argue that that is exactly what the planning process is, right? And it's off the back of a pub down there, McCafferty's. They have applied for planning permission for an extension to extend their pub further down Quay Street into what I think it must be where the Buc-ee's used to be, or is be. But anyway, he says there should be a public forum for people to have to say about the development of Donegal Town, because it could lose its heart or its spirit. And he's not really a big fan of their signage and what have you. But anyway, that's his personal opinion. And as I say, you could argue that that's what the planning permission is for, and commission planala, that's what that's there for. But anyway, he wants a separate forum. And this caller says, in relation to what the speaker said about McCafferty's, I think people do see his point. It's not a bit too much too soon, and what's already there is enough. Security can also be heavy-handed around the diamond. This is separate, I presume they're talking about Gardaí, I don't know. Donegal's homecoming, and it was really special, and the new design failed to take that into account. It should be in a car park. Well, the last time I went to a Donegal homecoming, it was out the back. It was out the back by the credit union. And I think that was because they were doing work on the diamond. So it has been done elsewhere in the past. Right, now, Paul McLaughlin is gardener at Ballochderg Garden Centre. He's in studio with me now. Paul, how are you keeping? How's life?
Not so bad. Winter's back again today.
What about that, isn't it? I mean, now the evening temperatures aren't dropping down to the plus ones, the plus twos, 7, 8, and then, you know what, 12, 13, 14. That northerly's freezing out there.
Yes,
I know. Does that an impact have, what does that have an impact on, if anything?
Pretty much. Well, like you say, now the evening temperatures are not going down as much as they were, so the threat of frost has passed. Yeah. So definitely it seems to be time for the bedding plants to go on, if you know what I mean. Mm. But a day like today with that cold one now is it's unpleasant to be out, Ken. I know, to be out gardening, if you know what I mean.
So yeah.
So it takes a motivation out of you, basically.
It is, but do you know what? There is signs that the temperature is going to increase throughout the course of May. Some dry weather, and you know yourself, you could almost predict when you start to see cars pulling in.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we're all creatures of habit. We like to think we're individual and special, but we all kind of think the same thing at the same time.
Pretty much. Our business is very seasonal. Like, and you can put it down, you can pin it down to the date nearly, where that it's really starts kicking up a gear, if you know what I mean.
And it is really, I don't think we've actually got into meteorological summer yet anyway. So anything at this time of year is a bonus, isn't it?
Traditionally, older gardeners for the bed and plants, that sort of stuff would have been this 1st of June.
Yeah, really. You often talk about planting spuds and, you know, in with March, out in July, I think. It's not too late, it's borderline. So really this would be our last slot where you'd be saying you can still get them in, right?
Yes, pretty much. My father would have said he would have put in spuds as late as like the 1st, 2nd of June, the sort of June bank holiday weekend, but that really is sort of pushing it.
He's a madman.
Yes, pretty much. So no, we put ours in, the last of ours in last night there, so we did.
Yeah.
So,
any leftovers?
Yes, we have actually. That's just wrote you a wee note there. We have actually about 4 or 5 bags of seed potatoes left over and above what we've planted. So we hate to see food going to waste. So if anybody wants them, first come, first served. But they're free for the taking if anybody wants them.
Danner, Ballagher Garden Centre, Abbey Quick. They have seedlings that they don't hold for a year. No, there's no way.
They wouldn't.
They're
really,
sprouting and rotting. And
to be honest, there's some of them not even really comfortable composting because they can even blight in a compost heap.
Yeah, you don't want that.
You would pass that to your good spuds, if you know. So now, like I say, without wasting food, if anybody wants them, there are 5 or 6 different varieties there.
Sweet. So. Right, bedding plants, as you mentioned, we're right in the teeth of that now. It's a great way for simply to get your fingers a bit green and a bit of splash of colour wherever you want to plant them. Bedding, just to be clear, because I want gardening and this item to be as inclusive as possible. When we talk about bedding, people might in the head think, you know, there's an area of a lawn, it's circled out and the plants and plants. But you can plant bedding plants anywhere and have that splash of colour, can't
yes,
you?
I suppose the name probably came from like the Victorian times. We've seen the people with the big formal flower beds in their garden. Very few people do that anymore, probably because of slugs, snails, that sort of thing. It takes a lot of time and effort. So the way most people do it now is just pots, window boxes, hanging baskets, that sort of stuff. You see it in every town in the country from now on. You'll be seeing them popping up. And really good way of adding a good splash of colour to your house.
Yeah, for sure. And if you plant them now and look after them, you know, and deadhead and all that kind of stuff, you're looking at the colour for the summer, effectively. They will deflower and reflower.
Pretty much, they should flower right up to the first frost.
Theoretically,
you should get Halloween out of them. So for something that's relatively inexpensive, you're actually getting very good value for money in terms of you have 4 or 5 months of colour for your house.
And the plants themselves now are starting to bloom and show that colour.
Yes, they are. Right. Funny, they're a bit a week late this year showing the colour because of the bad weather that we had previously. Mm. But no, it's just prime time from now on.
Yeah, and as I say, you know, if you want to get into gardening, you want to try something, it's, you know, we talk about roses and hedges and lawns and moss and all manner of things, but, you know, it's a great entry level.
Yes, it's a great entry level, and it's fairly instantly gratifying in terms of you buy the plants, you put them together, and it's a good way to get kids into gardening too because they can really see the value of their efforts.
What do we plant in the next few weeks for flowers in June, July and August?
Plant, once again, if you're going for pots, sort of the world's your oyster at the minute.
Yeah.
The main one you see in every sort of pub, every town, is the petunias. The trailing petunias is the big one that's going to give you value for money and get the most out of it. But now, if you go to any garden centre, they're just full of colour at the minute.
Yeah, and as we've just outlined by coincidence, that colour will carry through those months.
Yes, absolutely. So a lot of people sort of wedding season coming in now, a lot of people looking to get...
That's it, yeah.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that in the past. People have planted to match bridesmaids' dresses
absolutely,
and all that type of stuff.
So that's quite common all right there. Yeah. So you'll get very creative with our...
Why not? Can I have some advice on caring for white beam trees after planting? What are they for to start with? And then
white beam tree is classed as a native tree. It's an evergreen. You probably see them sort of the line streetscapes, if you know what I mean. They're the top of the leaf is green and the bottom of silver. Mm. That's where the term white beam comes out of, because if you see it flapping the wind, it almost looks white.
Yeah.
Nice trees, a wee bit hard to establish, so they can be. They're temperamental to wind and stuff like that, but once you get them established, they're perfect. So generally, if you establish them, to establish them first, from now on, if the weather gets good, but every 2 nights, give it a wee watering.
Mm.
And just keep, make sure you don't go near a restroom or anything like that.
Don't what, sorry?
Make sure you don't get near the strimmer or anything.
Yeah, yeah, so okay, yeah.
If you can, actually read like a circle of the grass away from the base of the tree.
The wee divas by the sands. Pretty much, until they get salted.
Like I say, they're really hard to get through the first year.
Yeah.
And after the first year, you're perfect.
Wow, okay.
Yeah.
Water them every couple of days and just be conscious of the strimmer and other activity.
Exactly, and possibly maybe some of the poultry manure, say, every 3 months.
Yeah, okay.
Around that, but not.
What's a reasonably priced but best evergreen hedging for a large area?
Yeah, best evergreen hedging we would have. You have sort of three options there. You have laurel, escalonia, or the gristlinia. People tend to stay away from the dreaded Lalandes these days. But my personal choice...
That is only down to maintenance, isn't it?
Maintenance, exactly. Right. They're a wee bit environmental issue too.
Is there? They're so not invasive, but they're so aggressive.
Aggressive, and they can't actually support insect life.
Right.
So your likes of a beech hedge can support 200 different insects.
Yeah.
Lalandi can support four.
Wow.
One of which is the midge.
Okay.
Which you don't particularly want.
Oh my word. Right.
In terms of the best hedge, I would also advise gristlinia. Gristlinia is grand. It's not as fussy as laurel for the ground conditions, and it tolerates wind very well.
Okay.
If it's an inexposed site. And lovely looking hedge too.
Yeah, brilliant. Greg, would you please ask Paul, I have a lot of dahlias, growing, but this last 2 years they have a lot of foliage, but not many flowers. I wonder what could I put on them to get more flowers?
Flowers on dahlias. Dahlias are very reliable plants, very traditional plants. To get more flowers on them, you can flower this time of year with potash. Potash is it's a specific type of fertilizer that puts the effort into the flower, as opposed... But the sounds that the plants are healthy enough looking, so any high nitrogen would help the plant, but not the flowers.
And potash is something you buy?
Yes.
Okay.
It comes in a powdered form. You just sprinkle it on around them this time of year, and it should improve the flowering for the coming season.
What type of climbing plant, Paul, would you recommend for a pergola?
Pergola, there are a lot of options there, I suppose.
Is that the crisscross woods and stuff like that.
So generally they're formed into arches over a seat, if you know what I mean. Suppose round here the clematis is out at the minute. I'm sure if you're driving about you'd see them, the sort of pinky purpley flowers. Very good, very vigorous growth, would cover it up quite quickly. Great flowers. Or the big thing at the minute there, well, that's what do you call the thing, Bridgerton was in the TV.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes,
yeah.
Wisteria was what was in the front of their house. And it is really, it just shows how TV can sort of dictate fashion in the garden.
Yes, of course.
Yes.
And I mean, presumably you do have to intertwine it as it grows. Will it actually follow?
The legs of the clematis or wisteria will grip itself.
Really?
It's just the natural thing. As we tendrils, it puts out and it grabs on.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. If somebody you'd have to tie onto but couldn't be quite effective to is climbing roses.
Yeah, okay. So but wisteria, if you liked Bridgerton. And what was the other one you mentioned?
The clematis.
Clematis, okay.
Clematis would be the quickest.
Both are good options.
Yeah.
We like quickness, don't we? I cut some trees in the garden and there is a lot of sawdust on the garden. It's very difficult to get it lifted. Will it cause any harm? Should I leave it? Or any tips to lift it? Interesting one. I can imagine they've been cutting it down and take the tree away and there's this sawdust all over the lawn.
Yes. Funny, after a couple of the red warning storms we had, there was a lot of people lost trees. And it is actually a big thing around the garden.
Yeah.
A small amount of it does no harm, but actually probably would actually benefit your garden a wee bit.
Mm.
So if you just get a rake and if they're a big pile of it, take the worst of it away. But if there's a certain amount left through the grass, it doesn't actually do anything.
So say, for instance, if you sort of see sand through grass, you want to see the grass and all that kind of stuff. You don't want it to be a blanket.
Yes, exactly.
But if you can spread it out to the point where it's amongst the grass, it will break down.
It will break down, actually. It will fertilize the grass eventually.
Okay, so turn that fern upside down. That could be an advantage. I recently planted roses, but how often should I water the buggers and what feed should I give them?
You get specific rose food. It's the ratio on would be 5-5-5. It's sort of feeding every aspect of the plant. Generally, it comes in granular form, so you do it maybe twice a year, probably now, or whenever you planted them, and about the 1st of July or so would be quite good. And in terms of watering, sort of, you have to, if they're in the ground, you have to judge it by the weather, if you know what I mean. But to establish them, maybe if you threw a drop on them every, say, second, third night,
Should do the trick. How do I keep brown slugs out of my pots?
Keep brown slugs out of your pots. A few different options there. So I hear a lot of people swearing by actually putting balsamic vinegar in there.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently they avoid it. But if you can be sure there are none in the pots, sort of, normally the pot has a rim on it. If you actually put a bit of Vaseline,
Someone
got up on it, it actually should keep them out. Just create a barrier.
It's literally that they can't get across it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Or you actually can buy now, it's like Sellotape, but it's made out of copper.
Yes.
And put it around the top of your pot. and it actually has the effect of keeping them out that way because they won't cross crapper because it carries a charge and electrocutes their belly. So it's just no electric fence for slugs, basically.
Yeah, okay.
But you have to be sure that there are no slugs in the pot before you build your fence, because otherwise he's in the all-you-can-eat buffet and he's delighted with himself.
All right, okay, that's interesting. What is the right time of the year for hanging baskets and window boxes? We're right at the start of the right time of the year.
Absolutely. Just generally, most garden centres, you'll be looking all through the month of May, probably first couple of weeks of June. After that, I would say you'd struggle. It's just people... there is sort of a cut-off point to the season. But no, pretty much for the next month, you're happy out.
Can you please ask Paul, what's the best type of evergreen hedge for a boundary fence along a field that cows won't eat?
Cows won't eat? Evergreen that cows won't eat, you would be struggling. So they would generally, they're going to have a wee nibble at something. Electric fence would be your option, keep them back. But if they're not your cows, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah, it's a tough one, that.
Farm hedges that stand up, generally, it's not evergreen, but the whitethorn. See it flowered at the minute, would be quite good.
I've started my carrot seedlings in my greenhouse. They have sprouted. Just looking for a bit of advice about then moving them to the outside.
Yes, carrot seedlings, if they're in wee pots or if they're in sort of cellular trays, as little disturbance as possible. And try not to touch the leaf if you can.
Okay.
So make a wee ridge and take your seedlings and drop them in and sort of at an even space. But if the carrot fly is actually quite smart, and if you touch the leaves, it releases a scent. And then the carrot flies can be on them quite quickly. So just the minimum disturbance to them as you transplant them out.
Interesting.
But now it would be a grand
So you're saying take some soil with them and
yeah,
try
exactly.
And scoop
if they're them out. If they're in wee pots, just take the whole bunch. Don't try and break them up individually.
Yeah.
Just set them in.
Okay, because once you trigger a scent that attracts its enemies effectively.
Yes, exactly.
Right, okay. I was thinking of growing rhubarb. Is it difficult and does it need much work?
No. Rhubarb is actually one of them plants that sort of almost thrives in neglect. So it does. Generally, you give him a good feed in the autumn time, whenever he does this thing between sort of now and October. Give him a good feed in October and he'll be happy enough for the next year. So he will. And just keep him quite a shaded, damp site he prefers. So, but now they're perfect and very easy growing.
Yeah, and really, I suppose the general advice at the moment is, you know, water, but don't water excessively. Feed, but don't feed excessively. Don't be afraid of ripping off old blooms, etc.
Yep.
Just the what might seem like the basics. But also watering an opportunity, I presume, to check your plants, your flowers for things that could damage them.
Exactly. If you sort of, if you're watering every day, you're kind of building a relationship with your plants and you're seeing stuff as they arise. So if you can spot like a potential... sword
enemy
exactly
Vermin. No, it's not that I can't think of the word either.
I know, but if you see a potential thing that's going to be a big problem, if you spot it early, it's less of a problem.
Okay. And green fly, white fly, that's the kind of stuff we're looking for at the moment.
Yes, exactly. Probably in the next few weeks they'll be starting to become more active.
Cats can be a bit of a problem too.
Yes, cats are a big problem, especially for your likes of your window boxes, because they tend to go up in the window sill and just knock them off very handy. So the big thing is just deterrence for cats, is just make some, they're very habitual. So if you can break the habit of them going in your garden, so we would always advocate something like a water pistol.
Yeah,
give them a shot.
But there are
so
some
often.
Stuff you can get to that doesn't harm the cat, but I mean, if there's options, it will choose another option rather than messing around with
exactly.
your stuff.
You can get
it?
Products based on like citrus fruit, just the essential oils, that sort of thing. They tend to stay away from it a wee bit, but they're quite smart too. So eventually they'll bypass that as well.
All right, okay, brilliant stuff, Paul. Thank you very much indeed. Until we meet again, don't forget you can find out more from Paul at Ballagher Garden Centre, just down the road from us here at the Mountaintop. And we have a whole network of amazing garden centres right across the region, and they're all very open and friendly and willing to chat you through what you're interested in talking about. Until we have you back on, Paul, thank you very much.
Jeremy, thank you.
A caller says, as someone involved in the Irish apartheid movement years ago, I think it's ghastly that people make comments about people with parents from other countries. Anyone born in Ireland is Irish. Does this mean Paul McGrath's not Irish? Well, you see, the people you're talking to, John, probably believe he's not. That's the reality. Maybe they think that Rory Gallagher isn't. I don't know. But anyway, John goes on to say, I think that they are more Irish than people who don't accept people with different skin colours. Racism is creeping into our psyche and it's unacceptable, he believes. My maternal grandparents went to America and met no blacks, no Irish and no dogs, he says there. On citizenship, when I was at national school 70 years ago, we were told that Eamon de Valera was born on a ship. And the first port the ship pulled into was New York, where he was birth, where his birth was registered. So he was a Yank or an Irishman. Yeah, okay, so we would have had a bit of a dual citizenship buzz going on there. Yeah, we were talking about a whole group of patients being called to Scally Place, I think it was, 10:30 in the morning, 150 of them. On the issue of appointments, the local surgery here are the same. I had a doctor's appointment last week for 20 past 10 to discover seven other patients sitting with the same appointment. I know a surgery not far away and one person is all you would see in the surgery at any time. So what is the logic of, and there must be a logic to it, mustn't there? What is the logic of sort of giving people in these generally medical settings, it would seem, you know, a group of people the same time. What is the logic there? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. On Ladies Beg, Bay, hi Greg. Is the investment enough? The capacity of the sewage plant is a stopgap. The population is increasing to surpass Irish Water's works. P.S. Ladies Bay is Litter Bay anytime there's good weather. And it's not locals, by the way, says Oisin. Oisin, come on. Let's have a bit of good news. But you're probably right. But those works aren't completed and hopefully things will improve going forward. And listen, we need to stamp out whomever is responsible for littering. Hi, Greg. Surprised this has not come up before, but I think it has, but not for quite some time. I was in Letterkenny University Hospital at the weekend. The prices in the shop at the front door, unbelievable. €4.20 for a bag of jellies that are €1 in other shops. €3 for a small bottle of juice, €2.35 in all other shops. How can they do this? Typical Ireland exploiting the struggling people in their time of need. I'm not sure if that's private run or HSC run. It's a convenient shop and it is convenient and you often pay for convenience. But anyway, we'll look into that a little bit more. Hi, Greg. Whoever should be in charge of the road from Dromahol to Ballymaleki crossroads would need to get the finger out and fix it. It's a disgrace since seeing the 10T will be another 10 years. Yeah, okay. Well, keep on it and raise it. Raise it with the council as well. On beaches, what about bringing back the diving board at Ladies Bay? Wasn't familiar. There was one there. It's obviously not an area I frequent very regularly. But if the water's okay to swim in now, which it is, bring back the diving board, says the listener. There was a person knocked down outside the Bank of Ireland, a pedestrian crossing in Ballybuffet. Where are our councillors now? This is not the first time a collision has happened here. Glenmore states outside Ballybuffet, there are young boys flying through it in big tractors and they're on the phone. If someone gets caught in those wheels, they're a goner. These are two separate issues, by the way. Listen, I don't know the circumstances of what happened this morning, but I do know before it was even opened, that crossing never made any sense. Have a fantastic Wednesday, everyone. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9.